It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey, welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here. You know, I'm just kind of getting the day started it's one of those mornings where it's taken me a little bit longer to get up and get going for whatever reason. But it's good to have you here. I'm always excited to be here and share some time with you. And I appreciate having you here from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate it because you guys are the reason that we have, great show ideas come from our audience, from people just like you, great guest ideas, and of course, you help us get syndicated on different programming here and there. So we thank you so much. And I just want to, talk quickly about this because I think it's important for a lot of our folks. You know, every now and then I'll get somebody who'll send me an email or they'll, chat with me on Facebook or whatever. And they're looking for business ideas, right? How to expand their business, how to maybe get started in a business. And my answer lately has been, have you considered having a digital product? You know, and when I say a digital product, it could be anything that you can download, could be an ebook, and could be a set of videos, combination of videos and a PDF, whatever. This is the biggest growing trend right now in the in America, right? It's over $100 billion strong and growing. And some segments of this teaching and training market, if you will, is growing by 30%, 35% a year. So if you don't have that, you ought to consider it. If you're looking at what business to start, consider that. Consider a digital teaching training business. And most of us have knowledge that we sometimes take for granted, that we don't think is very valuable, that is valuable to other people, right? And what I mean by that is sometimes we look at our gifts and we don't think that, you know, we just assume that everybody's a good cook or everybody can work on their car or that everybody, you know, knows how to grow houseplants. And it comes easy to you, but it's hard for other people. And you need to show other people the things that you know. And all of a sudden you have a business. So I want you to think about that, and if you have any questions, hit me up on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. All right, that's let's get our party started here. I want to invite our first guest going here. Erica Collins is an author, professional speaker, educator, media personality, plus model, actress, former Miss Plus America, and current international brand ambassador. Entrepreneurette and city leader, Washington, D.C. and New York for Sexy and Wealthy in Heels. Love that. Sexy and Wealthy in Heel. She knows expert Erica Collins, an executive producer and host for America's Enterprise, a TV cable streaming show, and Blog Talk Radio on Enterprise as an internet radio show, serving approximately 14 million growing listeners and viewers on cable and online base from New York. Erica Collins, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. Thanks for having me.
You know what? It's something I want to ask you is this. At what point in your career did you decide that being a plus-size model was something that you were going to get involved with? Because, you know, there's a point, quote, when you think of somebody as a model, you never think of a plus-size model. But it seems like plus size models are now, not only mainstream, but they're just as popular as, quote, whatever regular size models are, whatever that it means. But how did you decide to get involved in plus size modeling?
Well, Bert, I think my journey is a little bit different than a lot of the ladies that you see out here now. I've actually been in plus size modeling for over 20 years. And I didn't choose it. It chose me. I was a student at the George Washington University in D.C., and a couple friends wanted me to go out for a fashion fundraiser. And the first year I got in, no problem. The second year I had gained a little bit more than the freshman 15. It was more like the freshman 45. And the choreographers were very stern. They were from New York. They had hired some choreographers that year. And they were taking people out of the call-outs. And the gentleman stopped the music and he said, I want everyone to look at her because she's the only diva in here who knows how to walk. And this started me on looking for professional training. And I ended up studying under the Top Plus model in D.C. And my first show was at Macy's.
Wow, that's cool. That's cool. You know what? And so I want to kind of see, maybe take you back as you started this career in plus size modeling. Did you have like some fears and some doubts in getting started in this career path?
It was so new, and I was very young. At that time, your average plus size model was in their 30s, and a lot of the clothing was for women who were probably up 30, 50 years old. So it was really a learning experience for me. I don't know that I had a lot of fears going into it. It was more of a hobby at the time because right. I was going to school for media and a couple of things. GW is not known for plus size modeling. So it was really something that I was investigating. It was fun. It actually was a lot of exercise as well.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, when you say that, because a lot of people think that plus size models, you know, are quote unhealthy. Give us your thoughts on this.
I think that there are a lot of skinny people who are very unhealthy. I think
sure.
everyone needs to find the correct nutritional diet for their body type. They need to find the correct exercise routine for themselves. And I'm becoming more interested as you get older into a mental health routine.
Mm.
I think overall this is what works.
Yes, yes. And I want to kind of talk about this a little bit. It just seems like we have this this thought process that if you're skinny, you're healthy. And I'm glad you pointed that out because we all know there are a lot of healthy a lot of skinny people that are skinny because that is their, what do you call it, their current, what do you call it, metabolism allows them to stay skinny, right? Now, I know
right.
that there's some people who, you know, who I've heard many people who say, well, one of the reasons I smoke is because it reduces my, what do you call it, my craving, so I don't eat as much. So you're using one unhealthy thing to make you even unhealthier because we all have to eat. And so that's right. Just because you're skinny doesn't mean you're healthy. And we know a lot of people like that. Skinny is unfortunately one of those superficial, elements that our society quote appreciates, right? Oh, if you're skinny, that's great. But the reality is, as you said, we all have to find what works for us. And I honestly believe that if you are, when I say you, I mean our audience, anybody in our audience, if you want to spend, you know, 4 to 5 hours in the gym, you could look like one of these fitness models. You know, I talk to Tony Horton every now and then, and you know, Tony Horton does that for a living. He looks that way because he does it for a living. He's constantly on top of his diet. He's constantly working out. He's constantly, tweaking his food intake. It's a lot of work. It's a full-time job to look like some of these fitness models look. And that's okay if that's what you're into, but it's a lot of work, just like being a model is a lot of work. You know, as you mentioned, you have to train. You have to. It's both mental as well as physical.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let me ask you this: when you're here, you're a plus size model, and it sounded like when you started your plus size model career, you were not, it sounded like years prior to you starting your plus size model career, you weren't necessarily a plus size. You were, talk about that. I mean, were you always plus size, or is it something that, that just naturally or organically happened? Talk about that.
Well, I joke around a lot. When I was 9 years old, I was always a bigger girl, a taller girl. I was 5'6" when I was 9. I joke and say I had a body like Beyonce, which is actually true. I have the pictures to prove it at 9 years. And I developed very early. So I was not, it appeared growing up that I was so much bigger than everyone else, but I actually was pretty normal for my height prior to that. But plus size, the industry actually starts at size 10. And recently, as of recent this week, we're finding that your average American woman is a size 16, 18. So the majority of women in the United States are what would be considered plus size. We say curvy. We're trying to get rid of the plus. But your average size woman is now what the entire plus size industry had started out as.
Interesting. Interesting. You know what? And again, I want to point this out because if you look at a lot of these runway models, the skinny runway models, a lot of them look so unhealthy, right? It's just like if you look at a marathon runner, okay, and I know I'm probably going to get some emails about this, but just hear me out. So when you look at somebody who runs marathons and these long endurance type runs, there are now people who are running 100 miles in a day or two or whatever. A lot of them to me look unhealthy. I mean, they're just so skinny and they look like they just got out of a POW camp or something. It's just there's no point in being so skinny that you look unhealthy. And I think that we are now, and I want to get your thoughts on this, we are now in a point in America where we're starting to, I guess, become more realistic about what healthy is, right? That if you're a size 10, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Well, the first thing you're talking about athletes, and you're also talking about models. One of the things that I learned very early in my modeling career, and I'm assuming it's pretty much the same. The reason why your straight size or traditional models were so thin was based on economics of the fashion, because the material was so expensive. And I don't know how much people know about putting together a fashion line at the levels of, you know, let's say a true New York Fashion Week or in Milan, et cetera. But the material is extremely expensive. It's very expensive to put together a dress. And a lot of times the designers are pinning and tweaking the clothes as the models would go on the runway. So they really wanted the models to be like a blank slate. That is why you had this extremity of women who look unrealistic and skinny. And a lot of people don't realize that really was the basis for having the models so thin. The industry has changed a lot. So that has given way to more curvy, voluptuous women that you see on the runway. And in terms of athletes, there's been so many horrible things that you've heard as far as supplementals and substances that were used to achieve certain successes. And we've moved away from it just being a game, a competition, and looking at the overall health and wellness and true athleticism of the athlete. So I think in those two realms, people need to investigate what the industry is really about before blindly looking at images and then trying to compare those images to themselves.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that I've noticed, and we have, my wife and I have five kids. So we have two boys and three girls. And one of the things that I've noticed, especially with girls, and I don't know, you know, this applies to young ladies and as well as older women, there is this addiction, if you will, this immediate, this idea or this process that we compare ourselves. And I see this very much with my girls, where they'll compare themselves to somebody that they're looking at in a magazine. And even though intellectually they know that some of these people are models and they do this for a living, and so they're on a regiment, and also sometimes they, you know, a lot of these photos are airbrushed, they compare themselves, and no matter how much, you know, no matter how smart, no matter how much of a self-esteem they have, no matter what their background is, women tend to compare themselves to these women in these magazines. And men, not so much. That's at least what I've noticed, where guys will look at another guy who's physically fit and, you know, and they may say, hey, I'd like to do that or whatever, but it's not this step-by-step comparison, where I see that with you know, my girls. I see it with their friends. They will, and I think that this is interesting to me because, again, this is something that has been trained in our society, and I'm not really sure how it happens, you know, and because I know it's not something that it here at home, it's not something that they got from being here at the house. You know, we don't subscribe to Cosmo or anything like that. We do subscribe to a few health and fitness magazines, but it's just amazing to me, this thought process where women tend to really compare themselves to sometimes unrealistic goals. And it doesn't even matter now. It doesn't matter whether they're looking at, plus size models or, regular size models. There is still a comparison. There is a judgment that they feel that a lot of times they're inadequate.
Well, you're talking about two different groups, the younger women and then older women and young girls. I do a lot of speaking, and one thing that I always think about is that I grew up in an area where I looked like really no one else growing up. So there really wasn't much of a comparison. I grew up in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, so I didn't spend a lot of time comparing myself to others because there really wasn't any comparison. I think what was instilled in me growing up was that if you're going to compete in anything, you compete against yourself to do better. And that's something that I speak to young ladies and speak to girls about. I think today, and what's most important and what is probably going to change and evolve even more with social media and some of the changes that you see in the plus size market, et cetera, is simply having different types of women, different types of men in representation in every field so that people see a reflection of themselves. American society is supposed to be this diverse. We went from a melting pot salad bowl. I don't know where we are in the foodscape right now. But the images that we were seeing throughout the 80s and the 90s did not reflect that.
Right.
You know, so, you know, for me personally, one of the most amazing images, which was for a lot of people, although I thought it was just only me growing up because I was an only child, was Oprah. You know, she was a plus size minority woman who was doing amazing things. And that became, you know, my visual kind of role model, so to speak. Now there are several Oprahs, you know, and different
right.
variations of Oprah out there that women can identify with. So I think we are working on it, and we're trying to work on it. I think the younger people now are also being influenced by what they see on social media. And their social media is somewhat close to whatever their network is. So the biggest thing I think for younger people is to expose them or assist them in exposing them to the different social media networks that they can either befriend or link into that gives them different representations as they're scrolling. And I think that overall we're working towards more acceptance of each human being as a human being. And this will eventually kind of make us overall healthier mentally, emotionally, and be more critical about what we see in the medium.
Sure, sure. You know what? And I think that Oprah, influenced not only the women, but as well as the men. I think that, you know, she broke so many barriers. And I think one of the things that people appreciate about Oprah, and again, I think this is something that she broke the mold with. And then, of course, now a lot of people model her. And that is, you know, she shared her personal struggle. So, you know, she went from a plus size and then she lost a bunch of weight, and she went through a fitness cycle, and then she gained some weight, and then she did something else. So I think that she really opened up that conversation, or she started that conversation where she allowed people to see her for her humanity, right? And everybody could identify. And I think that's why she became such a hero to so many people, both again in the male as well as female demographics, because she just let everybody in. Hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. You know, let's change subject a little bit, because I know I want to talk about your one of the books that you wrote. You're a children's author, Eric and Ruby's Healthy Juice Stand. I love this. Eric and Ruby's Healthy Juice Stand. Let's talk about this. What inspired you to write the book?
Well, I was working with a drink company that had won the Outstanding Cold Beverage for the Sophie Awards, which is kind of like the Oscars for the specialty food industry. And in my journey in the specialty food industry, it really got me into thinking about all the different things in food, and also about my childhood growing up, that we really didn't have a lot of emphasis in education on simply how to eat healthy. You know, you had your little presidential awards, and maybe it was for a week, but it wasn't really ingrained. I forget what they called that. It wasn't really.
No, I think it was I think you're right. Presidential fitness award or whatever, and everybody did it for like a week or two, right?
Right, exactly. That it was over. So if you weren't an athlete, you that was it. You got a week of health and wellness, and that was it. It wasn't really ingrained in you, and explained and taught in such a way that it became like mathematics or the English language, etc. So I decided that I wanted to write a children's book. It's in three different languages. It's in English, Spanish, and French, considering that we are, again, trying to figure out what the salad bowl versus the melting pot is. Because I also have a master's in education, to really be part of a curriculum, something that teachers could use as a teaching tool, aside from just reading the book. So it has activities in there for students to kind of reinforce the story. And the story is really about Eric and Ruby and their journey. They actually become advocates in Washington, D.C., about all the different childhood obesity, cancer, things that may have been caused by poor diets, environment, health and wellness issues. And they end up winning an award and meeting the President of the United States.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I love the fact that it's a concept that a lot of kids, even parents are somewhat familiar with. Instead of a lemonade stand, it's a healthy juice stand. And I think that's immediately a win there, because when you can incorporate something new, or where you have something new and you can incorporate something that, you know, has been around for a while, something old, to me, it's a great use of that, of history, for lack of better terms. You're innovating, but at the same time, people understand a couple of kids with a lemonade stand, or a couple of kids with, in this case, a healthy juice stand. I just thought it was a phenomenal idea.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It actually takes you through, opportunities to actually put together with different, there's curriculums attached to it or lesson plans attached to it where you can create your juice stand. And some people have gone as far as creating like a science curriculum where you're actually making the fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And I think that, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. It really is about education. I don't think that we have enough. And some of the education out there that we do have, unfortunately, is, for lack of better terms, tainted by politics. Meaning, if you look at where our government gets a lot of their, quote, health information, such as the food pyramid, they get it from some very large political contributors, the dairy industry, the meat industry, the grain industry. You look at all this stuff, and our government gets their, quote, information from these political parties, and it's not as independent as we think it is.
True, very true.
Let me ask you this. Here you are. Go ahead. I was going to say, I want to kind of ask you this question. Here you are, you're doing all this stuff. You're a plus size model. Now you're an author, you're a speaker. You do all these different things. You've been on MSNBC and all these other programs as a media personality. What's a personal habit that you feel contributes to your success?
Meditation.
Really? Meditation?
Yes. because I've been in extremely high stress environments and constantly on the go, and my mind is constantly moving and constantly being creative. And just to take that time, even if it's just a more traditional meditation or just to, quote, block everyone out and everything out, to kind of reset, refocus, and reorganize is what gets me to the next level with everything.
Yes, and you know what, and it's so important, because one of the things I love about meditation is, like you said, it's almost like, not only are you blocking things out, but it's hitting a reset button. And sometimes, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, Erica, sometimes in our society we are encouraged, if you will, to, you know, run 24/7 nonstop, and we as an individual get lost in the mix. We're running so hard, so fast, for so long that sometimes we don't even know what we're doing anymore.
Exactly. I think even with social media, people don't realize how what you're seeing is manipulating you, controlling some of your behaviors. And you really have to take, you should also do in your meditation a social media or media detox, because your mind is processing the information that you're seeing, and something that might not even bother you. I mean, we're in a very heated election cycle. All of a sudden, you know, you might not have been thinking about certain issues, and because you keep seeing it over and over and over again, it starts to hit certain nerves, and then all of a sudden you're upset and you're doing things that you weren't even doing just because you saw those images and thoughts, you know, on your social media screen. So you have to be very aware of how things are affecting you and affecting and your daily routine and thoughts, and really just clear all of that space out and start to rebuild what direction you want to go in, what you want to focus on.
I like that phrase, media detox. I think that everybody should do a little media fast or a media detox. I like that idea because you're right. The way our brain works, and I tell this to people all the time, it's how we learn, but it's also how, how somebody could hypnotize you, or how somebody could, and I know hypnotizing might be over the top, but the way somebody could, program you, it's repetition over time. And you mentioned, we see these images and at first they don't affect us, but as we continue to see them, all of a sudden our mood changes and we're not really sure why. Well, you're being manipulated, as you said, by the media. And we all need to be aware of that we have to be aware that the way we learn and the way that we can be, altered, brainwash is the word I'm looking for, is it's a repetitious cycle. So you're seeing the same images, or in some cases, you might be seeing slightly different images, but the same message is being sent over and over and over again. And all of a sudden, you're influenced to maybe buy a brand, or you're influenced to feel a certain way, or you're influenced to do something that that you had really no intention of doing. So
exactly.
We have to be aware of that. And I think that, when it comes to social media, and I'm glad you said that, a lot of it is, manipulated or created by professionals. I mean, there's a lot of people who pay big money to have, quote, stories go viral or videos go viral. And it's not just a bunch of people who are saying, hey, look at this great video. Sometimes it is something that is purposely being constructed to look like it's organic, to look like it's being promoted by the masses, when in reality it was something that was created in a marketing, in a ad agency or whatever, to get you to change your mind.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I could cite so many things that I'm seeing, and especially I think for certain generations that are aware or know the difference. Unfortunately, I have generations out here who don't know the difference. They don't know the difference of fake media versus real media. They don't know how to properly cite and decide what they're seeing is actually real or fake. I've seen advertising where they come into a kid's Instagram as a friend, and shortly they're starting to promote cereal boxes, or they're just doing what normal kids would be doing online, but they're actually promoting a product. And when you go back and keep going back, you start to find out that they're actually a model for that product.
Right.
So,
well, I'm glad you brought that up. And Toyota has a brand called Scion. I think it's Scion or Scion or whatever, however you pronounce it. And it's a little boxy car. And that's what they used. Some people refer to it as stealth marketing. Other people refer to it as guerrilla marketing. But it's that under the radar marketing where Toyota had put aside 70% of their marketing budget for this vehicle to be marketed this kind of under the radar stealthy way, where they would show up to an event or a park, and they would have some attractive models in this vehicle, and the vehicle is all, tricked out, so it's got great sound system, and all of a sudden what you think is an organic experience with, hey, look at these attractive people in this nice looking car, is a marketing campaign to create buzz and awareness for the brand. And it works very well, and it's very smart, but it happens all the time and we're not aware of it.
It's very true. And it's interesting that you cited that, because a couple years back, I think it was 2003 or 2004, before social media, there were marketing firms. I was working with a marketing firm that had the Just My Size account, which was part of the Sara Lee Corporation. And they hired 10 women, plus size models, to go to all the Walmarts in the country and ask women what they felt about the intimate apparel. And we had a big Chevy van that had the promotional marketing on the side of the truck. And they valued that because the more people saw that, the more likely they were to go and try to get fitted and purchase the intimate apparel at their local Walmart. So now you couple that with the fact that you have social media. We were just kind of doing that subliminally, going from place to place. And now you have a more powerful machine that can actually target market everyone on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter that might be between these sizes, between these ages, and influence their purchase.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you this. What was the best piece of advice you ever received?
And for general or for
yeah, in general. I mean, when I ask you that question, you may be thinking socially, you may be thinking entrepreneurially, you may be thinking, what do you call it, health wise. But so best piece of advice that you've ever received, you know, as far as however you want to answer that. I'm just going to put it out there and let you answer that however you feel is best.
I think it goes with I'm a broad scope it and then bring it back to childhood conversation. It's being true to yourself and being authentic. And I appreciate that more now, I think, than ever before, because jobs, careers come and go. And in each bump of the road, hills, you know, you'll be at the height of something or the low of something. You have to remember who you are in each case that keeps you going. And just to kind of bring it back to childhood, I always remember, and this is kind of goes back to what you were referencing earlier, my mother saying, ask yourself where these people are going to be in 5 years. Where are you going to be in 5 years from now? So right. When you're constantly focused on being true to yourself and your authentic self, it's going to make you happier in the end. It's going to make you healthier in the end. And it's going to keep you focused.
Yes. And back to, back to Oprah Winfrey. I think that when I look back at Oprah Winfrey, she was one of those individuals who was true to herself. And I want to talk about this because that was something that that didn't happen overnight, even for her, even though it looks like it did. She started in Chicago and just like all of us, you know, you try to fit the mold that they want you to fit, but eventually she was able to break out of that mold. But I remember her as one of the first individuals that I saw who was being true to herself. And she, again, I already talked about this. She invited you in to experience her life a little bit. And I think a lot of people were breathing a sigh of relief saying, man, if Oprah can be herself, then I can be myself, right? And we see this all the time when a celebrity, an athlete, a best-selling author, a media personality, when you feel their authenticity, it gives you permission to be authentic to yourself. And the sooner we can do that, the happier the happier we'll be. Most of us, and this has been my experience, most of us don't get to be ourselves until we're, you know, I want to say until our 40s. When I hit 40, I remember, starting to realize that part of my unhappiness or some of my frustration was I wasn't being authentic and I wasn't being real. And again, one, you start to examine yourself, that's ultimately what it's all about, right? And the two or three best friends that you have like you because they know you intimately. They know how you, they know your weaknesses, they know your strengths, they've seen you through the good, the bad, and the ugly, and they still like you. And I think that that's the way it is in real life. If people see you for who you are, they're either going to be repelled by you, and that's okay, or they're going to be attracted to you, and that's okay. But ultimately, you're going to be happier because you are being who you are.
Exactly. The 40s are interesting time frame. It's just interesting that you reference that. And I think people reach being comfortable with themselves at different times in their life. I think for myself, which kind of makes my situation a little bit more unique, is like I said, I accepted very early that I wasn't like anyone else. So it just was obvious, and I was taller than everyone, but for some reason I didn't shrug my shoulders and you know, become insecure about it. I was more promotive right. about it, used it to my advantage, became president of the school and motivated people, because I was so noticeable. And then I think with, you know, just being a woman of size, getting yourself involved in things like plus size modeling was another encouraging factor of who you really are.
Right.
And when I started trying to decide when I wanted to start my own companies and things like that, before the concept of being your own personal brand was so popular, I took a good look in the mirror and I said, what do people see and what do I see? And then I just started making an outline of what I enjoyed doing and kind of developed my path from there. That happened kind of like at the end of my 20s, 30s. I think we all go through different stages depending on what's going on in your life. And I think, as you were saying, I think by 40, you know, your parents are older, you've done your education, the thing, the barometer that you were talking about, unfortunately, people have with comparison becomes non-existent. So it's easier, I think, for the majority of people to start to really look at who their authentic self is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Erica Collins, it's been a blast having you on the show today. And if people want to find out more about Erica Collins, where can they go?
I have a website. It is i-am-erica.com, like America, but it's I am Erica. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The name Erica Collins, plus size modeling, Eric and Ruby Selfies Juice Stand is in Barnes & Noble, also on Amazon. And I have a lot of great projects coming up.
Great. Erica Collins, it's been a blast. If you want to find out more about Erica Collins or her activities, you can go to i-am-erica.com. Erica Collins, looking forward to having you back again.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Good stuff there from Erica Collins, entrepreneur, best-selling author, plus-size model, and ultimately just a very authentic, fabulous person. And I think that, you know, today's takeaway, at least one of my takeaways, was, again, we have to be ourselves, you know, whatever that means. Let's just, you know, let's just be ourselves. Let the chips fall where they will. And the more authentic you become, the happier you live. Everything goes a lot smoother and you're able to, what do you call it, block out more distractions. And you care less about everybody else's opinion. And I think when we can all get to the point where we really are being authentic and we don't care about other people's opinions, we're just doing what we want to do, what we're passionate about, what we love to do, we're not trying to infringe on anybody else's situation, then it's all good. And one of my favorite people to look at is some of these people in entertainment that stand out for, and they're kind of known for being weird. Sia is considered being really weird, but she's very authentic and she doesn't show her face in public. She's always has her face covered. And a lot of people, including myself, think that's really, you know, kind of a cool thing. She is standing out by being extremely different. Anyway, bottom line is it's good to have you on the show. I've had a blast with Erica Collins. Hope you enjoyed that as well. And remember, most of all, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.